So, you guys, you know, I want to honor your time and get your 6:15 or 5:15 and 6:15. So, just real quick, I'm sure people usually trickle in. Hopefully tonight they'll trickle in because we have some good stuff, and hopefully they'll do that. And then when we're done, I've got some handouts for you. But in the meantime, I do have these sheets. And throughout the night, you can write questions, comments, suggestions. And then what I do is I go back and I answer all those for you, and I'll bring it to, we'll have, our next meeting is in January, because we go into finals. We're in finals in the next time we come around. So I want you to be able to share and get home, mm-hmm. too, because I know you've been here early. And so this is Elizabeth Hetland, and so she is our new Spanish teacher. So Tracy Kirvin has been teaching Spanish forever, and she went into teaching English, and we are fortunate enough to get Elizabeth this year. So she's going to present kind of her vision for our Spanish department.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, thank you. So like Mrs. Fonda said, I'm Elizabeth Hetland. I thought I'd start off with telling you a little bit about myself. So I put some pictures up here. Let's see. I live in Sheridan, so I make this commute every day, which has really been exciting the last few days over the nice roads we've been having. I'm originally from Warland. So just over the mountain. So a small town feels very homey to me, and being back in this small school. I own a food truck in town as well, which is another fun adventure that I get to partake in. And let's see, in general, I like to be outside, whatever that is. So I like to hunt, fish. I played college golf, and I studied in Costa Rica. Let's see, I've been teaching, this is my sixth year of teaching. I originally taught down in Casper, and I won the Wyoming Foreign Language New Teacher of the Year. So, a little bit about me. So kind of the why, I guess, you guys are here, is you're wondering what do I do? What does Spanish class look like here at Buffalo High School now that I'm the new person? So there's this idea about comprehensible input, and so it kind of comes in a number of different ways. The first is through content. So what that means is when a student, either of your kids are in my class too, when we have someone in class, I do a lot of short stories, novels. I don't use any textbooks. I'm not a textbook person. And so what that means is everything is at their level. Everything's in the target language. There's a lot of culture embedded in it. We do a lot of music and kind of taking apart songs and understanding just little bits and snippets of them. But culture is music is a big part of the Spanish world too, so it's nice to have the music part to bring that culture in. The part that freaks all the kids out is we read novels sometimes, towards the end of the year usually. When I know students are fully able to handle it in context, it's all in Spanish. And it's really a fun adventure for them because they have a lot of ownership, like, oh my gosh, I read a whole novel in Spanish, and it's just a really proud moment for them. But it's nothing they can't do. I also teach grammar a little bit differently. So in order to help empower students in their learning, I like to give grammar in context. So for example, we just did a short story about this cow and a monkey. And it really doesn't make any sense to the average person. It's just meant to be a funny story. And it gets them a lot of like grammar, subject pronouns, noun, gender agreement, a lot of things that they don't know. And then what happens is after they've worked with the text a little bit, answered some questions, done some drawings, then we go back and we look at the finer details. So in the story we just read, I was teaching them subject pronouns without them knowing it. And so now I just went back and did like a mini grammar lesson saying, all right, here are what the subject pronouns in Spanish are. And then I want you to now go back in your text and circle them all. And so it's also another, again, accomplishment for them. Like, oh my gosh, I already knew all these. So it gives them a little ownership in their learning as well. So what that learning ends up looking like is what we call proficiency. So because it's a foreign language, it's not necessarily an A, B, C, D, E, F, or not E, F, but D or F grade. I'm basically looking at what students can do with the language, and that's in a number of different ways. And so if you've ever seen on PowerSchool, like for my class, I have all the modes of communication. So speaking, reading, writing, listening, and there are some like presentational modes in there too for students to show me what they've learned. And so everything that they do is at their level. And so right now, this is kind of the proficiency scale in the world of language teaching. This is where everyone starts, at the very bottom. There's not a lot of language, they don't have a lot. As they start to go up in proficiency, you'll notice that it starts to get a lot bigger. That's because they're getting a lot more information. They're able to do a lot more because they have a bigger foundation. So the more they understand, the more they get, the more proficient they become. And so everyone starts at the novice low level, which is basically, I can say some words, I can understand some words. That's perfect. It's right where we want them to be. As they progress through the levels of Spanish, it all kind of varies person to person. Generally, by the time they get to Spanish 2, they should be about novice high, novice mid to novice high, depending. The novice high to intermediate low is really difficult to get to because there's so much information. If you look, there's still a whole other gap of information they have to obtain to get there. So usually an intermediate low student happens in Spanish 2, and then we go through the intermediate levels as we go through proficiency in Spanish 3 and 4. So I thought I'd do a little activity with you guys today, so I hope you're ready to learn a little Spanish. So here is our first activity. I'm going to give you some vocab. And I also have it on the board up there. So this is some key vocabulary that I want you to know as we move forward in this story that I'm going to give you guys. Okay, it's just a short, easy story. So some key vocabulary. And when we do vocabulary, I do a lot of movements as well. So if I do a movement, I want you to do the movement too. So for example, the first one we have is este es or esta es. And this is my movement, like I'm presenting somebody. So I say este es or esta es. So repite, I want you to do it with me. Can you say este es and show me? Este es and show me, like you're showing somebody, this is. Este es. Muy bien. Este es. Okay, the next word that we're going to learn today is the word se llama. And so this is how it looks. Se llama. Like you're pointing to your name tag. Se llama. Repite. Se llama.
¿Cómo se llama?
¿Cómo se llama? What's your name?
Mm-hmm.
¿Cómo se llama? So repite. Can you say that, please? Se llama. Muy bien. The next... Well, I kind of put these out of order, but that's okay. The next two characters in our story, we've got muchacho, meaning guy or a boy, muchacho. And then I've got muchacha, meaning girl. Okay? Our last kind of key word to take note of is the word dice. So this is what it looks like, dice. Can you repite? Dice, like you're saying. Repite? Dice. Muy bien. So what's the first one? Este es. Muy bien. Then we've got se llama. Muy bien. Then we've got muchacho. Muchacha. And then dice. Muy bien. Which means says. I also put them in English here. I'm not going to tell you what they are necessarily. Okay. This is an interactive story. So what that means is I'm going to be asking you questions. So be listening. And let's see if you can figure out what our story is about today that you're going to learn, okay? All right, here's a really funny story. All right, este es un muchacho. Clase es una muchacha o un muchacho?
Muchacho.
Muchacha or muchacho?
Muchacho.
Es un muchacho, sí, muy bien. El muchacho se llama Pedro. Clase se llama Juan o se llama Pedro?
Pedro.
Pedro. Muy bien. El muchacho se llama Pedro. Pedro es un vampiro. Un vampiro. Pedro, el vampiro, es misterioso y silencioso también. Clase, ¿Pedro es un mono o un vampiro?
Vampiro.
Sí, es un vampiro. Muy bien. Pedro, el muchacho, es un vampiro. Clase, esta es una muchacha. Oh, ¿es un muchacho o un muchacha?
Muchacha.
Excelente, muchacha. La muchacha se llama Kylie Jenner. Sí, se llama Kylie Jenner. ¿Se llama Julia o se llama Kylie?
Kylie.
Kylie, excelente. La muchacha se llama Kylie. Muy bien. Oh, mira. A Pedro le gusta la muchacha Kylie Jenner. A Pedro le gusta ella. Muy bien. Pedro dice, hola. Kylie Jenner dice, ¿cómo te llamas? ¿Cómo te llamas? Pedro el vampiro dice, me llamo Pedro el vampiro. Kylie Jenner dice, ¡ah! Este muchacho es un vampiro. Y le pega con una guitarra. El fin. Muy bien. Let's see how much you understood. ¿Cómo se llama el muchacho?
Pedro.
Muy bien. ¿Cómo se llama la muchacha?
Kylie Jenner.
Excelente, Kylie Jenner. ¿A quién? ¿Who le gusta quién?
Pedro
le gusta
Kylie Jenner.
Excelente, Kylie Jenner, muy bien. Oh, clase. ¿Qué pasó en el fin? What happened in the end?
Guitar.
What happened?
There was an assault and somebody left.
You got it. Who was scared? Do you remember who was scared?
Kylie.
Tiene miedo. Muy bien. Y ella le pega Pedro con una guitarra. Muy bien. El fin. There you go. That's our mini Spanish unit today. But how that would have worked in class would have been, this would have been our key vocabulary for the unit that I wanted the students to really become competent in. And so we keep it really simple. We do a lot of interactions with it. But it's a way to like have fun and kind of learn things along the way. So that's my little mini unit for you guys. So excelente, students. Muy bien. I believe that is all I've got for you guys. Do you guys have any questions? But I wanted to give you a little taste of like what class kind of feels like when you are in my room. So.
Do you have a quick question?
Yeah.
You take the kids at the level of where they are.
Yeah.
Has there been a case where one of the kids doesn't progress to the second level, but and
absolutely.
So within that semester,
mm-hmm.
or
yeah.
So then what do? Just keep hanging in there?
No. So sometimes it's a maturity thing. So like in the past, it doesn't happen very often. But typically, I mean, no offense, young men are a little bit slower to catch on to a foreign language than most girls, like, at their same age. And so, for example, I've had a couple freshmen in the past who it just wasn't clicking. And when the time we got to semester, I was like, I don't know that this is going to work for the rest of the year. If we keep going to a novel, you're not going to understand. No matter how much I give help for you, I can't do it for you. And so then I'll have a conversation probably before the semester with that student, like, hey, this is what I'm noticing about you in class. You can start coming in before or after school so I can give you that extra support if you need. But if it's just not clicking, sometimes they just need a year. And so I might have a conversation with Mrs. Fonda and be like, I've had this student, it's not working. And then I'll ask them to come back maybe next year and try again. And that maturity just clicks.
And then the counterpose to that is, can a kid excel, you know, shoot through a couple of those levels within that semester if they're motivated? Or is there kind of a gauging that you can't go this far until you get into another semester?
Yeah. So typically, you know, I've got a couple very quick learners. And I try, I guess, like in my class, I try and continually challenge those students. But generally, it all kind of happens together proficiency level-wise. You know, like if you think back to the picture of the cone that was upside down, those students who I can see advancing quickly, I try and continue to build their knowledge base, whatever that is, so that okay, if I know the student's going to reach the next level, I want to help them do that, even though they're in maybe a level two class or in a level one. I'll try and get them some additional material to try and build up that foundation. And then they might go into Spanish 3 next year, but they'll have a better understanding than other students. So it all kind of varies, but I think the nice thing with Spanish is those students still have an opportunity to shine. And I use a lot of kind of preferential seating in my class where I do a lot of mixed groups, where I have those students who are really advanced kind of work next to someone who's not, because those people tend to be really fantastic teachers and solidify their learning as well. But then I'll have someone across from them, usually the same level, so that they're able to work with that person and challenge themselves further on maybe a different assignment or just like an extended piece of the assignment that I gave. Okay. Yeah, I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah, it did, because the wonderment is not everybody's moving at the same rate,
no.
But yet the semester ends at a finite point.
Right. And generally, you know, the nice thing about a foreign language, it's a year-long class. It's not just a semester and then you're done. So at semester, you know, I kind of have a checkpoint of where I think everyone should be, but my like level one, they're all over the place right now. But like, I understand, okay, like this person isn't really understanding right now. For example, like I said, we did subject pronouns. It's like, this person doesn't really have a clue what's going on in class. Like we've read 3 stories and they're still like really struggling, or you kind of get a feel, but generally, as the year progresses and we get more like language and novels under their belt, it just starts going, and it's really cool.
So at the end of the year, they will have attained at least the modicum of what you'd hope.
Right, to move into another proficiency level. And at the end of semester, and generally the beginning of a new semester too, if there's new students. Like this year was a hard learning curve for me. I had to figure out where everyone was because I had no idea. And so I basically gave like a summative assessment like I would do for the end of Spanish 1, saying, okay, technically in Spanish, this is to reach your proficiency level. This is what we need to have a conversation about. Or you should be able to understand this text. Or you should be able to write to me all of these things. If you can't, then I know where we're at proficiency-wise. And same with like my 2s, 3s, and 4s. Same. We had a conversation thinking this is all the stuff that you should be able to do, and kind of went from there. Anyways.
Awesome. Any other questions? Thank you, Mrs. Hedley.
Thanks.
You did awesome.
Thanks
that
for
was
learning.
Fun. That was fun.
Appreciate it, everybody.
Okay. Mr. Miller is going to join us now with all things ag and FFA and all of his wonderful accomplishments. So,
well, that's a tough act to follow.
I know, right?
I apologize.
If you do it in English, we might be able to understand. Do you need a PowerPoint?
No, I don't. I'm
very good.
Not prepared, I suppose.
She's in one.
Well, my name is Josh Miller. This is my second year here at Buffalo High School as ag and welding instructor. I'm also the head FFA advisor up at the high school. also the head FFA advisor up here at Buffalo High School. I've really enjoyed my time over the last year and a half. I think it's a great program. I think we're kind of shaping it more to where I would like it to be. It's a slow process, but we're getting there. We did restructure all of the classes this last year, kind of up at the high school. I was kind of a pain in the butt with Madonna and all the people in the main office, but we did restructure those. So currently I teach Welding 1, Welding 2, General Ag, which is a new class we started, which all freshmen, for all students that it's their first Ag class, take General Ag. And in that course, they see me and they also see Bev Bowden, who's the other Ag teacher, and they spend half the time with each of us. That way they kind of get a broad scope of what it is to be a Buffalo High School Ag student. And then that way they can kind of select which pathway or what's going to benefit them, their interests the most throughout the rest of their program. I also teach ag construction and fabrication, ag entrepreneurship, ag power 1 and 2. I think that that's pretty much all of them. But very shop or ag mechanics oriented. That's kind of our sequencing. The goal behind that general ag class is students can get an exposure to everything, and then they can kind of better prepare themselves or better set themselves up to what classes they'd like to take in our ag department that interests them the most. Some students are very shop heavy and they like to spend all day out with me. Some students are more animal or plant science based and they spend more time in the main building with Mrs. Bowden. So that's kind of where we're headed and we're trying that out this year. I think it's working really well. I think we've got room to grow, but I do think it's working well, and so hopefully those freshman students are enjoying it. As far as FFA goes, I would say that we're kind of in our slow season, but I'm not sure we ever have one. We just got, myself and four students just got back from National FFA Convention in Indianapolis, Indiana, where we competed in the Ag Mechanics Contest. Those four students were 10th in the nation, which is pretty awesome. They worked extremely hard for 10, 11 months, and then we went out there, and it was a very neat thing. Those four kids had won at state convention last spring, and so they represented Wyoming at that contest in Indy. We also had four students, or former students, but still FFA members, receive their American FFA degree, which is the highest degree that an FFA member can receive. Less than 1% of FFA members actually received that, and so it was very neat for four people from Buffalo, Wyoming to receive that, and they actually were all four able to come out, walk across the stage and receive that in person, which is also extremely neat. Actually, the first person out of the gate in that ceremony, all of those ceremonies are televised. The very first person to get their American degree this year was River Bills from Buffalo, Wyoming, so that's pretty neat. We are just about to head down to Casper this weekend, actually, for a leadership conference with freshmen and some middle school FFA students. They started a middle school conference there, so that'll be neat. We're taking 30 students, supposed to be taking 30 students down to Casper this weekend for leadership growth and those types of things. It's a very neat experience. It's kind of, for most students, it's their first taste into what being an FFA member really is and kind of getting to meet students from all across the state. And then we'll kind of go back down to a little bit of a not as busy season for a month or so, and then we'll pick up CDE and LDE practices for the spring contest. CDEs are career development events, and then LDE are leadership development events. And so those are just opportunities that students have to kind of grow, finite their skills, and then they result in Wyoming at a state contest where they compete against all the other FFA chapters in the state. And then depending on how well they do, they may advance to the national level. I would much rather answer any questions that you get. I'm not sure what all to tell you, but I'd love to talk to you all night. I'm not going to, I promise, but I'd love to talk to you all night. But if you have any questions or if you're interested in more kind of ag or ag shop related at the Buffalo High School, I'd love to, or FFA. We are an affiliated chapter, which means that every member that, or every student that takes one of my classes or Mrs. Bowden's classes is automatically an FFA member, and so what they get to do what they want in that. I don't try to force kids. That's not necessarily true. I do poke kids in the right direction sometimes, but I'm not going to force a kid to do anything that they don't want to, so they get out of that what they want. So,
Josh, do you mind just sharing a little bit about your spring event that you have where the kids get to sell their products?
Sure. So this is kind of a really neat thing. I was all new to this last year, but Buffalo High School does a spring show. And so every spring, the CTE department as a whole, so business, all those different CTE people put together a spring show. And so students get to showcase as well as potentially sell products that they make. So in my world, we make a lot of metal projects that students can either keep, or now that we've kind of started a school business, if they don't want to keep them, then they put them in the school shop. But that's an opportunity for not only for people to come and see what students are doing, but also some those students have the opportunity to try to sell those products at the show. And typically we do a couple products for the shop itself. Last year we did a couple grills that I thought turned out pretty well, and so those were just for the live auction. And so, but it's really neat to get to see all the different departments of the CTE world come together and showcase what we're doing, because I think sometimes there's a little bit of a disconnect once you walk out of this doors to go home. You don't really tell your kid or your parents all the cool things that you are doing, even though you are doing them. And so getting to kind of see what your students are doing is awesome. So,
you know, touching on that, as a parent, realizing that there are these things that show up and mm-hmm. there's a display, sure it'd be nice that there'd be a little more information put out into the community so that the community knows that
yeah.
it's there, because it's like a well-kept secret, and it's like, well, some of these things
I think you're nice. Absolutely right, and that is something that we discussed last year, and I think we'll definitely discuss it more this year, is how to better advertise that. I know that it was advertised, I'm just not sure that it was advertised to the most potential that we could have. And so advertising that is a thing. I mean, the culinary department comes in and they produce awesome treats that the general public can just come and sample, and this is what we're doing in culinary. I mean, it really is an awesome event, so I completely agree with you.
Yeah, because it's like we hear about it. Our kids are in the school. Mm-hmm. We hear about like a day or so before, and it's like, what?
Right.
And so that's real short notice for us
right.
as parents. But absolutely. I think there's some things that the community needs to see too, or at least have the opportunity, and it doesn't seem like it gets out there. And so when we come through, we see all the parents,
right,
but not a whole lot of the general population.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with you. I think that that's something that we'll continue to look at moving okay. forward, to try to figure out what that nice balance is, or what we can do to reach the most people. And yeah, I definitely agree. So
I have a question. There are many families in this community who come from long agricultural, ag, ranch lineage. There are many that do not.
Right.
What do you do to encourage students who may be reticent to join, you know,
right.
what looks like a fairly informed group already, and to give them a taste of what that could be? And how do you encourage those students?
Yeah. I think that that's the question that I continually ask myself that I'm not sure we've quite figured out. We do have ag offered at the middle school, which not all ag programs across the state do have. I think that that helps a lot, allowing that to be offered as an elective at a lower level. I think that that does a really nice job of kind of feeding students into the program. I'm not sure what the answer is, truthfully. I wish every school at Buffalo, or every student at Buffalo High School, took my class. I really do. I think that would be amazing. I think it comes, the biggest conflict that I see, and it's not something that I think is something that has a solution, is scheduling conflicts, because there's only so many of me and Mrs. Bowden, that a lot of the times, especially with kind of the way our classes are structured, if it doesn't perfectly fit a student's schedule, it's pretty difficult to get them in the class. And so I do think that that's a big problem. But to speak towards the actual, like, not being an agriculture student and being afraid to take an ag class, we start from square one. I mean, that's the basic idea of that general ag class, is we're going to start at square one and we're just going to keep building up. And so you get a general of everything in this course, and then hopefully if you find something that you're interested in, you can kind of pursue that pathway a little bit more.
Can I tag on to that,
yeah.
Josh?
Another nice thing that is available is they've got, like, if you don't have the facilities, you know, if you're not a ranch kid that's got a ranch to put their horse or their pig or their sheep, they have the barn, they have the facilities, and there's places for kids that don't have that. So there are kids that don't come from maybe that lineage that do participate. So that's a really great thing to offer our kids so they can participate.
Yeah,
that's an extremely unique Buffalo High School program thing. Not very many programs across the nation have what is considered the ag lands, and we are working towards making that a project facility instead of it being like it used to be. A flock of school sheep was kept there, and that was it. And we're kind of moving in the direction of project-based project barn, where students who don't have the capabilities at home. I would hate for a kid to tell me that they want to take a pig at county fair, but they can't because they don't have a place to take it. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to make that as best as we can to serve that need also.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. I didn't know for sure if I get you here in the spring, so I wanted you to get a plug in for that spring show.
Yeah, no.
So see, I'm already advertising.
Perfect. We're already getting it out there.
Well, thank you guys. I appreciate you for your time and thanks for being here.
Thank you, Josh, and congrats to your national kids.
Oh, thanks. They did all the work.
Okay, so I'm going to have Mrs. Schimmel's going to talk to us all things library books.
Schimmel, and I'm the district librarian, and so in case you didn't know me, I am in charge of all the libraries throughout the district. I'm thinking I typed it wrong, but we'll see. Meadowlark, Cod Peak, Clear Creek, the high school, and KC. I travel out to KC. I try to one day a week. And so I manage purchasing budgets, all of that stuff, and the OPAC system, which is how we manage what's in our libraries and how kids can access it. And so I'm hoping that we can look online here. I'm going to show you how they can access it from home, and some different things that they can do. There we go. Through Go Wild and research also that's available to them. Okay, so we'll first start with our own library system. And so it's all the same system from Meadowlark through KC. And so it's all kind of that interlibrary loan, kind of like the state is, essentially. So we can actually share books through the different libraries. If they need a book for something, even just pleasure reading from KC, we can have that brought here for them. It might take a day, but usually we can get it here. And so when they're at, if they're at home doing this, they would just go to their school. They always have to log in. And so that's something that they need to remember. They have to log in when they're at home. So if they're on any device, they're going to have to log in from their Google account, their school district account. And when they're here, they'll log in and then they'll go to student resources. And then I have a BHS library resources page. It might come up. And this is where they can go. We'll first start with just our Destiny Discover, and that's what it is that's our system that we go through for all of our library books where they can search. And so they'll click on this Destiny Discover link, and it's going to take them directly to our own library system. And so you guys can see some books that are available when they log in. They can log in, they can put holds on books if they want to. They can check and see what books are in, what books are out, what books I've recently added. We do have some ebooks available that they can read online through our system here. And we have a couple audiobooks, but not a bunch through my Destiny system. this is the system that I control. Like, this is my system here. I do all the purchasing. I enter in the materials. They can log in They can check out the ebooks and audiobooks. It's virtually their domain, kind of. Okay? Now, physical books, they don't check out themselves on the computer. They have to actually come into the library and they go through. Mrs. Chase is the paraprofessional here at the high school, and if they need to do an interlibrary loan, they would just ask her, or they could look it up. She'll look it up for them. We are genre-fied, I guess. I do that. We did that to all the libraries in the district, where we've, instead of having them just alphabetically organized, we have put them into their own genre. And so if you look around, you're going to see that they're kind of color-coded. You'll see red, and then you'll see blue and green and yellow. And so red is crime, we call it, so mystery, science fiction or fantasy, romance, realistic fiction. So then they can go to that section, and it's kind of their own section that they can look up a book that they want to read. And so that's how they can know where to go to find the books also. And so when they go in, they can look here and see that. And they learn this, as I go over this with third through fifth grade, and they look up their own books at that level. And so they know this from very young. And so they know how to manage the system and go through it and access it. Do you guys have any questions about this?
Yes.
Okay.
Let's say there is a book that they want to look into,
yeah,
but it's not here.
Right.
Would they come to you and tell you, hey, I would like to get this book to read it online?
Yeah, and so there's a lot of different avenues. And so if they come to me, so let's say it's an actual paper book and we don't have it in, it's checked out, right? So it's, mm-hmm, we have it, but it's out to another student. I can either put a hold on it, I can look in another building, and so maybe Clear Creek has it, or maybe the high school at KC has it. We're really lucky because Jody Humble travels back and forth every day, and so I have her bring a lot of stuff back and forth, and so she can bring me a book the next morning. We have staff that travels through here every day from KC, and so we're kind of lucky. If that doesn't happen, right, then that kind of leads me into our next thing. We have Sora. I don't know if you guys are or deal with Libby. Do you guys know Libby at all?
Yes.
So through the public library, and so this is a whole different system. So the public library, the company that they use is called Overdrive. And it's called their digital book collection is called Libby.
Mm-hmm.
The student version that public schools can use is called Sora. In order for students to use Sora, I am having parents sign releases because it is not, because they can link up with the Wyoming Virtual Library. I have control over my own Sora, so I can buy materials, but we also can have them link with the Wyoming Virtual Library, which is wonderful. But the parameters are set, and so they can't, the parameters are set for K through 5, which is an odd grouping, I'll be honest with you. And I've already talked with kindergarten, through fifth grade. I've already done all the parent meetings for those guys, and we've talked about that. It's a very odd grouping of books, K through 5. And so, but that's their grouping for that Overdrive company. And so we're not introducing it to kindergarten through second grade, but for third through fifth grade, they can't read anything that's above fifth grade reading level. But anybody, for them, so kindergarten through fifth, and then sixth through eighth, and then 8th through 12th. And so no adult books are in that at all for the Sora. Now for Libby, that's through the public library. It's completely different. You have to have a library card in order to do Libby. But with Sora, it's free. And you don't have to have a library card. And so this was such a huge deal for me last year because I was so excited because every kid, even if you didn't have a library card, you could have access to thousands and thousands of digital books, and you can download the app on your phone, and it has these beautiful colored picture books that these little people can read, which I was then disgusted because then you could also have fifth grade books. But I mean, it's just super exciting, and the parents didn't have to take you in to get a library card. And a lot of parents don't. I'm shocked at how many kids don't have library cards. They don't. Maybe two in every class would raise their hand that they have a library card. We have this big, huge, beautiful library. And so it's a free resource. And so I'm loving it, but I do want parents to know that, I mean, it is available, the virtual library. I have no control over. That is the state. And so, like I said, it only goes up to eighth grade, though, because I took away the parameter of even young adult. And so they can't even access YA right now. And so the Wyoming Virtual Library, it'll only go through eighth grade. And so even the high schoolers can check out anything below. They can check out a kindergarten book if they want to, which I love that part of it. Because I can go in and look at it. And I can show you guys that. And I have the parent permission slips for everybody here. I printed some out. And so if you've signed them, we can. But so going into that, Sora, I can also rent books. And so I don't have to purchase them. So for class sets, which we've done a ton of, so I can rent a class set of books. So Mr. Glasick has done this, so has Kira Wages. We have, instead of buying these paperback books, we've rented them for 3 months. And the kids can push them out through Canvas, and the teachers can track how far each kid has read. They can also track how often they've logged in. And if they've logged in ever, one of the kids was like, well, I can't access it. And so we looked on it, and I was like, well, he hasn't ever logged in. And Mr. Gostick was kind of like, oh, well, I didn't know that we could do that. And I said, yeah, he's right here. He has never logged in. And so it's a really cool thing. And we just rent them for like 99 cents a kid for 3 months, and they're done, and it's glorious. And so it's been really a good thing. And as long as the parents sign, it just, like, they just look on their shelf, and it's been great. And so a lot of times I can say, I don't have access to this book, but you do. But log into Sora. They all have Chromebooks. It's actually been glorious. And all they do is go to, you just Google, it couldn't be easier. You just Google soraapp.com, and it's right here. And mine looks different, because I am the administrator on the Sora account. And so I have full access, but you should see my daughter's. And it has like things flying all over it, and because she's only in third grade. And so it has all this cool stuff on it that shows up. And you can search anything, and it's fantastic. They can just open them up, and they just borrow it, and after 2 weeks, it disappears. And they just sign in using their Google account again. That's it. It's already linked up. They just sign in using their Google account again. Yeah, it's quite glorious. So that's Sora. But you have to, again, I would like parents to sign. I'd like to sign a permission slip. But, and we most, all the classes that have used it have signed. I have returned signed slips in my office and stuff. And so it's worked out great. So that's Destiny. Do you guys have any other questions about Sora or Destiny or anything?
What is the future of the library? Because I noticed that over the years, as the kids have come through here, the shelving of books is getting less and less.
Yeah.
And so what is the future? And
well,
if it's this, then doesn't that make it obsolete?
Well, I'm hoping not. I probably will never stop purchasing books, and I still have a lot of years left here. I'm hoping, you never know. I'll say right now that we still have lots of kids that want that paper book. They do. Even, especially those younger kids, they don't want it on their Chromebook. And so I think that there's this mixture. I think that libraries are becoming more of a place to get help more so. I mean, and I think they always have been, but I think that this is, they're coming in and wanting to be here more. And you'll see lots of kids in here all the time, and I'm hoping that maybe we'll start to spur and get that reading, love of reading back into So I think that we've lost that.
And that is the curiosity, because of electronic-based books, it does discourage, for some of these kids, the desire to read.
What
because
did you say
they
digital-based
books, it reduces their desire to read when they can just flip over and be humored by other things.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And so the other things win out over just reading this blank or this page full of words.
Right.
And so I wrestle with it, because when I went through school and college, the library was, that's where you went and you found actual resources. And today's understanding is, I'll just Google it.
Right.
And it's like, we got canceled if we did anything and made a reference to a website.
Right.
And it's like, whoa, life has changed, because now you're dealing with the ethereal.
Right. Oh, for sure. No, I get it. Times, they are definitely changing. That is happening.
But it impacts here, but it also impacts the city library.
Oh,
you
right.
know, and they're wrestling with that.
Oh, for sure.
You know, what are they, if we're reducing physical reading materials?
Right. I know. I have to tell you, though, that as a person who reads probably, I mean, pretty constantly, like, so I listen to books constantly, because for my job also, because I constantly am reading a lot of books that I don't even want to read. I mean, some of these, I don't want to read some of these teen books, I'll be honest. But it is pretty nice to have it right at my fingertips, to be able to, if I can't find the paper copy and I don't want to have to buy it, that I can just check it out really quick on my phone. And I can also listen to it really quick. And sometimes for those kids who also are having some maybe issues with reading, like they are that is also a really good thing for me to be able to say, well, here's a paper copy, and let's look on Sora so that you can listen and read the paper copy as you're going. You're get distracted and you're like, never mind, I don't want to do that. But if for some of them, that is a better way to have it. I know, but I think it's something that we're going to have to find a way to get past and survive with it and push reading regardless with that technology. So mm-hmm. I think we'll get there. Hopefully. I'm still pushing it. I'm using the resources that we have to push it as hard as I can. But that's our Sora, and this is our digital system on how we find books. Catalog. This is our catalog, our book catalog right now. So do you guys have any questions on this? So now I am going to talk about research, and it is not Google. And a lot of our teachers will not allow Google, and so I'm going to talk to you about how they can access Go Wild from home, which we're really lucky, because our state library has Go Wild, which allows us to have access to all of these databases for free. And usually they're very expensive. Britannica and all of those, EBSCOhost and all of those are very expensive. And so we get access to those for free through the state. And when they go to the student resources, the library page, you're gonna see when they're at home, they have to go through this Go Wild link. When they're at school, they can click on my quick links right here, like Britannica School or World History. Those are some of the quick ones. But when they're at home, they cannot do those quick links. They have to go through the actual Go Wild site, because this will take them to those sites that they don't have a license for. And so they're going to ask for they'll ask for the other license. And so they'll click on gowild.net. And this takes it to our state site. When they're here, then they can go and search what they're looking for. So if they're doing a world history paper or a research, then they can go to, I always tell them to go to Britannica. because that one is a pretty good site to get basic information, and it's not very frustrating. Sometimes research can be very frustrating, and I want to set them up for success. I don't want them to get frustrated right away. And so they need to go to some place where they're going to find information right away. And so I tell them to go to the Britannica site. They can log in, and then they would just search their topic, and it's going to give them some kind of basic information where they would be able to find for their research project. This is what the teachers are telling them. We're teaching them this from third and up. And so if they have any questions, they can always email me also. And so let them know that. I've had lots of kids email me in late at night asking for help with how to access Google. So, and because it's harder to keep up with book resources and things changing so drastically, like we are, they are relying a lot on these databases and keeping up to date. And so if you have any questions again about this, this is great. This doesn't just have resources for research, it also has some different things like novel lists. If they want to find a new book, like it helps you kind of, just search different teen books that are out there. They would just search here. I love this one, like if you loved fans of, it tells you, like fans of Harry Potter. Or fans of Star Wars, and then it's going to tell you different books that you could read that if you're a fan of Star Wars, you might like these books. And so that's kind of nice. They can get some different recommendations. If they have a recommendation for me, I would love to take it. Let them come and tell me. And no one knows what they like to read more than so if you have any questions about this, tell them to email me with any questions if they need help. Usually I can shoot them an article, also a link to it, and then they can click on it and they can do their research. I'm more than happy to do that usually from home. I usually have my phone on me and I can do it pretty fast. And they can email me if they need me. Okay. Do you guys have any questions about Go Wild or accessing any of this? I think that that's all I have for you for tonight. There's lots of fun things. Okay.
I love your enthusiasm, Leanne, about reading. Because, you know, it makes you like, oh, I want to read.
It's exciting. No, I'm in love with Zora right now. We've had lots of success with checking out those books and being able to have kind of access for those teachers to rent books. And it's been great. So,
Can I do one addendum? That newspaper article that was last week and had Oski on there with the library, he indicated that, you know, the selection process is much different here than it would be, say, in Denver or that. He alluded to that.
That it would be different?
That's more conservative as opposed to progressive as you get into a larger community, as I understood the selection process of books, so that we're not going to end up finding, holy mackerel, look at this book right here. It's pushing something that is community standards wise not relevant. It's promoting things that go against what the community standards are. CRT, any of those things.
I think that, I know that Mr. Oski keeps saying conservative librarian, and I probably am. I think that a lot of librarians are probably in general pretty liberal, and that's okay. I think that they are. I don't really like to have my own personal, I guess, agenda or feelings in place when I make selections of books, because I know that all my students are very different people, and I like to have books that they're all going to be able to read. Saying, with that being said, I also feel, and I don't know if you listened to our interview, like I already did an interview with Mrs. Harness, and so we've already done an interview with 307. And with that being said, a school library is very different, though, than a public library. And I'll say that again, and I'll keep saying that. I still think it is my job as a school librarian to have the best interest of my students at heart. And if I feel like it's inappropriate, I guess that's my judgment. And that's
what I would hope would occur, as opposed to having your standards, having a community standard, and then you just pitch that aside because, well, we need to be open. And so then it's like you set yours aside and then open the floodgates for other stuff that's kind of like, well, this is harming our community.
Right.
And I think that's the sensitivity of it.
Right. And like I said, so here's the other end of it, though. And so I have also said this, that my job is to make sure that the content level is appropriate. And so if the subject matter is there, and so if there is a subject matter of LGBTQ or anything that maybe racism or anything that maybe other people are not going to agree with, but the content level is appropriate, there probably are books that are there. And so content level, that's my job. And I'll tell you right now that this is a hard job right now. Because I'm not being judged on one side of the spectrum. This is a judgment from all sides of the spectrum. And I'll give an example. And so if there's a book that mentions two dads, and that's the only thing that this book mentions, that's content age appropriate for fourth grade. And that is content appropriate. There's no mention of sexuality. There's no mention of inappropriate. There's no mention of nudity or anything. If there's just a small mention of two dads, that's the content is not inappropriate for that age level. Do we have an astronomic amount of books that mention that? No. We don't. Is it appropriate for the percentage of our population? I don't know. Because when I pick books, I just pick good books. If their storyline is good and they have good values, and I know that kids are going to pick them up and they're going to read them and it's going to encourage them to have a book in their hands and read it, I want them to read.
Kind of tied to it is if those sensitive books aren't here, does it make it much more easier to say it's over on the digital side?
And so again, like, so as sensitive, and I get it, but sensitive to you might be different sensitive to someone else. And so it's so subjective, and it's
but
so hard.
But standards is not so subjective, because even the Supreme Court says based on community standards. And
right.
So you don't cast the community standards aside and say, well, we're open. You know, are you grasping what I'm getting at?
Oh, yeah, I totally. And I get it. But again, we've kind of talked about that in this, the subjectivity of what, I mean, even from you to me, your sensitive and my sensitive are completely different, and we could be the same political party and the same religion. And so I think we have to be careful on what we're holding back from other children whose parents are on the opposite side of Does that make sense? I think in the end up to parents to know what their kids are reading. And so that's kind of, and Steve Raza said it really great. He did such a great job in the interview. I listened to his interview with Kate last week. And he said, you know, I'll tell you right now that we probably have 50,000 books in Johnson County Schools. It's impossible for me to vet every single book. It's impossible for my paras. Mrs. Chase has, I would guess, 70 kids over the course of the day. And so she cannot read every single book. And so in the end, it is up to parents to know what their kids are reading and what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And so I think that we have to remind parents that they need to see what kids are checking out. And often usually they do.
Often as parents, right. We're catching it on the backside that the kids were assigned a particular book and they're supposed to read it for a particular class. And so we as parents hear about after the fact, as opposed to right up front saying, here's the list of books.
Well, I can't speak to that, though, because I don't do that.
And I realize that. But I also realize, as you've already acknowledged, that you can't read every book. The staff can't read every book. But there is somebody that is saying, this is age appropriate, and then they're pushing it through from the state side. You know, you mentioned the services that are available online from the state. That's great. But somebody at some point is making the decision on what is, and just for the sheer number of books, you can't read them all.
Well, we're very thankful at this point to have Leanne, and that she is pretty sensitive about that. So we're very thankful for that.
That's what I'm getting at. I'd appreciate that because it holds to a community standard as opposed to let the gates open and we're just going to be whatever.
And that's something I think we'll always have to address for as long as we have books and kids are reading. Mm-hmm. It's never going to go away, and there's always going
to
be.
So one final comment, because I think we need to wind up, and it's a conversation that it's very subjective, as Leanna said. One thing I think we need to remember as parents is that our children are not just getting what they learn from books anymore. They're getting it from a whole spectrum of different things, and most of it is digital based, and most of it, most parents have no idea exactly what it is they're consuming and how they're consuming it. So, and very narrow focus on being concerned about books, I think, needs to be put into a broader context of all the other things that we should be concerned about our young people consuming. And the books are just one small part of it. It's not that they're not important, but as parents,
we need to be
more mindful of everything that our young people are doing.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to wrap us up because I'm a taskmaster. So I just have a few things. If you do not have the schedule for the rest of the year for the meetings, our next one is not until January, because this time next month we will be wrapping up finals. So please grab a schedule if you need it. So that is available to you. If you did not get the Buffalo High School report card that was handed out last week, feel free to grab one of those. If you want the core issue schedule for December, our last time is the 15th. 1 month from today is our last core issues because I have a final schedule for parents. Because we go into finals starting December 16th. Which we have a weird schedule this year, so we will have two finals on that Friday. Then we'll come back Monday and Tuesday and have finals. And then your children will be done for the semester. Isn't that crazy? So if you have comments, questions, suggestions, if there are people that you want to come here, please write that down and I will try and get them on the agenda. I think it's very important, that's why I started this, for parents to get in here, to come to the school, to meet these wonderful people, to know who's with your kids 8 hours a day, and what kind of people they are and who they are, and I think that's important. So please spread the word. Thank you, Kate, for getting this word out there for us. We appreciate that. And just, like I said, spread the word so we can get some more people. I think we have 340-some kids. And a lot of schools don't have this, and I want the parents here.
I would second
These are
that.
Your kids.
I think that it's important for parents to come to this. That's great.
So,
So I hope they listen and come to these PIT meetings. They're awesome.
Yeah. So thank you guys for coming, and we're done, and we'll see you next year. I don't know if I'll be.